there is a new government and a new prosecutor general. I am prepared to do a public signing of the commitment for the $1 billion.
Despite of the fact that we didn't have any corruption charges, we don't have any information about him doing something wrong, I especially asked him, no, it was the day before yesterday, I especially asked him to resign.
Congratulations on installing the new prosecutor general. It's going to be critical for him to work quickly to repair the damage Shokin did. And I'm a man of my word. And that now that the new prosecutor general's in place, we're ready to move forward in signing that new $1 billion loan guarantee.
Well, what you just heard came from newly released taped phone conversations between former Vice President Biden and former Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko. Welcome to the Whistleblower Newsroom. I'm Christina Borgeson. What you heard Biden tell Poroshenko was that he wasn't going to get a $1 billion loan the U.S. promised to the Ukraine if he didn't remove Ukraine's Prosecutor General Viktor Shokin. And you heard Poroshenko saying he asked for Shokin's resignation, even though there weren't any corruption charges against him. So why would Biden want Shokin sacked? In part, it could have been because his son Hunter was on the board of directors of an energy company called Burisma that was under investigation for money laundering, tax evasion, and corruption, not only in the Ukraine, but in the UK. Anyway, needless to say, Biden got his way. The conversation, by the way, was leaked by Andriy Derkach, a member of Ukraine's parliament with ties to Russia, and Rudy Giuliani, all very helpful to Trump's reelection efforts. Now, I led the show with this today because I think it's always instructive to see or hear evidence of how our leaders behave when we, their constituents, aren't around. Of course, this kind of strong-arming isn't just a Democrat thing. For example, an interesting Russiagate moment happened when President Trump called the new president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, to ask him to look into whether a server connected to CrowdStrike was in the Ukraine. Today, I brought back retired CIA analyst and co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, Mr. Ray McGovern, to talk about this particular moment in time for Russiagate. Because this is the moment when the rubber may finally be about to hit the road for some intelligence officials in a way this country has never seen before. Now, I will say that Ray has just written an article about this particular moment, and the title of which is "Turn Out the Lights, Russiagate is is over," which we'll have him explain it in a minute, because now that we know that everything was not as it was posited by our intelligence officials, Mr. Messrs. Clapper and John Brennan, etc., but now is the time to see if any accountability, if there's any accountability to be had. So the stakes are high for these gentlemen and for our nation. So if anyone has a good idea of what our leaders are saying behind our backs at this time and what's at stake, it's Ray McGovern. So Ray, before we get into the here and now, I really want you to talk about what happened a few months ago when CrowdStrike's PR representative came out with a thunderbolt of a statement that didn't get much play in the big press. Could you talk about that and what it meant for the Russiagate thing?
Sure. Thanks for having me back, Christina. It wasn't a couple of months ago that the CrowdStrike chief, a fellow by the name of Sean Henry, who had worked with Mueller when Mueller was head of the FBI for Henry's entire tenure, about a year. He was his chief cyber guru. In any case, Sean Henry did testimony before the House Intelligence Committee on the 5th of December. Oops, wait a second.
Who's that far back?
The 5th of December, 2017. Okay, so what's that, 2.5 years ago?
Okay.
So, no, the news
How
is...
How can I be so wrong, Ray? How can I be so wrong about this?
No, you're not wrong. You're just mixing up the dates.
Okay.
The date that it was released was the 7th of May, 2020. So, what happened was the new people that Trump put into the National Office for Intelligence, the Director of National Intelligence, he said, look, you know, if Adam Schiff, if you're not going to release these transcripts, which have been redacted, they're not going to spill out any classified information. Matter of fact, we've gone through it with a tooth comb. They're ready to go. If you're not going to release them, I'm going to release them. And that is what prompted Adam Schiff, who has been head or ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, it seems like forever, but it's just about 5 years now. So what the Schiff did was release these things. And the thing that we found most interesting, there's a lot of things, but 53 people involved here, people whose testimony has been kept secret since around December of 2017 until now. So we looked at, Sean Henry. Now, he's had a CrowdStrike. Oh, this could be interesting. Let's see what he says about the evidence upon which everyone from Lindsey Graham to Jimmy Carter, everyone depends to know, in quotes, that the Russians hacked into the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, stole those emails and gave them to WikiLeaks so that Hillary wouldn't win. Okay, well, it turns out that what everybody, quote, knows, end quote, is unsubstantiated. There's no evidence for it. And, you know, how can McGovern say that? Well, it's not McGovern. It's Sean Henry, the head of cyber, or CrowdStrike. Now, what's important to note here is
did he say? What exactly did he say, Ray?
Well, here's a ranking member, Adam Schiff. Again, we're talking 5 December 2017. Schiff, do you know the date on which the Russians exfiltrated the data from the DNC? When would that have been, Mr. Henry? Talk about, Mr. Henry, when did you stop beating your wife?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so Mr. Henry doesn't really quite answer right away. He needs to consult counsel. Then he answers, Henry, counsel just reminded me that as it relates to the Democratic National Committee, we have no indicators that it was exfiltrated. Now, there are times, says Henry, this is continuing in quote, there are times when we can see data exfiltrated, then we can say conclusively, but in this case, it appears it was set up to be exfiltrated, but we just don't have evidence that actually says it left, end quote. Whoa. So this cyber special unit or contractor on whom everyone was depending, including, curiously enough, the FBI, for forensically investigating this, quote, Russian hack, end quote, says there is no indication of exfiltration of these emails. Exfiltration, fancy word for a hack. And so the whole thing collapses. That was the cornerstone. Now, why did Comey, James Comey, the head of FBI, why did he let the DNC use CrowdStrike to investigate what John McCain was calling an act of war, an act of war? It was an act of war by Russia. Well, I think it's pretty clear. CrowdStrike was going to do what the DNC hired it and paid it to do, just like Christopher Steele, okay? And CrowdStrike said, oh, yeah, the Russians hacked. And then in December of 2017, when his testimony was under oath, here's a sworn testimony before the House Intelligence Committee, Sean Henry would not accept the bait that was thrown to him by the Honorable Adam Schiff. And he says, no, you know, we don't have any concrete evidence that this was exfiltrated. Now, the interesting thing here is that he says, we can see when it's exfiltrated, and we didn't see it this time. We just, you know, we're going on circumstantial evidence, like what we saw happening was, quote, consistent with, end quote, the practices of a lot of people who do this kind of thing, and including the Russians. Wow, you know.
Well, so with. Now yeah. Wait a second, though. If we fast forward, I think what's even more interesting now, you know, what's additionally very interesting is CrowdStrike's admitted that they never had physical possession of the DNC servers.
Well, actually, it was the FBI that admitted that.
CrowdStrike, this is what they said. We have never had physical possession of the DNC servers. We conducted our investigation using a process called imaging, an established practice in cyber investigations that involves making a copy of the hard drives and memory. And then he said, we worked closely with law enforcement and provided all forensic evidence and analysis to the FBI as requested. Now, what's interesting about that is, as we just recently found out through Ty Clevenger, a lawyer for Ed Batowski, who is being, as you know, he's being sued for defamation by Aaron Rich, the deceased DNC staffer Seth Rich's brother. Aaron is suing him for defamation, Ed for defamation, because he talked about WikiLeaks to tell Seth and Aaron's parents that Assange wanted them to know that Seth was involved in the in him getting the DNC emails. And so Ty Clevenger has been fighting with the FBI to get information, and he caught them in a lie. Do you remember that? Have you been following that?
Sure, yeah. Ty petitioned the FBI for all communications having to do with Seth Rich. And they came back and said, oh, we don't have any. Zero. We looked and none. And then in a parallel Freedom of Information petition by another outfit asking for the text of exchanges between Peter Strzok of the FBI and Lisa Page, his paramour, but also, more important, the lawyer for the Deputy Director McCabe, it came out that there were several emails there. You didn't have to look into the body of it. They were the subject. The heading was Seth Rich in FBI files in the same office that had claimed there wasn't any. So what Ty has been telling the judge and others is, look, you know, you can't have it both ways. Either the FBI has records on Seth Rich or it doesn't.
Or either it has, it is doing, because the FBI said it wasn't doing an investigation, and clearly it was. But didn't they also actually get physical, am I correct in this? Didn't they also have physical custody of the computer?
No.
They never had physical custody.
No, that's the rub. You know, under testimony before the Senate and the House Intelligence Committees, Comey was very squirming, very, very uncomfortable, even though people like Richard Burr, who headed up the Senate Intelligence Committee before he's been investigated for insider trading. Anyhow, Burr asked him, now, Mr. Comey, isn't it normal practice for the FBI, the forensic experts that you have, to seize the computers, especially when John McCain is saying it's an act of war? And Comey says, yes, our experts would always prefer to have actual physical custody, but but the DNC wouldn't let us. We asked at various levels. We asked several times, but no, he wasn't in this plaintive voice, but they wouldn't let us. Now, give me a break. If the FBI can break into the houses of my friends, if they can arrest people on the street for nothing, they certainly can issue the kind of paper or get the kind of judge that will simply sign the paper saying, look, we need to get custody of these computers or server. There's no substitute for having it. And so give it to us, CrowdStrike. So what am I saying here? I'm saying Comey was in it from the beginning. CrowdStrike was hired by the DNC the same way that Christopher Steele was paid by the DNC. And Comey says to Senator Burr, look, you know, we never got physical custody. Now, Burr says, now, so who did you rely on? And Comey says, CrowdStrike. It's a super intelligence, a super cyber outfit. We relied on CrowdStrike.
Well, wait a second, Ray. I misspoke. What I was talking about was Seth Rich's laptop. Now, the FBI did get to examine Seth Rich's laptop because in a March 20, 2020 deposition, Deborah Sines, who retired from the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C., she was assigned to the Seth Rich murder case, and she testified that she met with Mueller. And she further testified about during her investigation, and she said that the FBI examined Rich's laptop.
Yeah.
Seth Rich's.
Yeah, I'm sorry for the confusion there. You're right on that. Now, I thought you had said before that the FBI had looked at
the DNC computers. No, I misspoke, and that's why I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is the more important point, that the FBI did have custody of Seth Rich's computer. Look, Seth Rich, let's put it in perspective here. Back in 2016, the big election year, Julian Assange announced on the 12th of June that he had emails pertaining to Hillary Clinton and they were pending publication.
Whoa.
12th of June, okay? Now, what happens? On the 22nd of July, just 3 days before the Democratic National Committee, they are published. They're published in unadulterated form, the way WikiLeaks usually does things, and the texts are verifiable. They're authentic. Okay, what do they say? They say, very clear, these DNC emails say that Hillary Clinton and the DNC stole the Democratic nomination from Bernie Sanders, pure and simple. And that's when, of course, the Democrats had to figure out some sort of way to divert attention from that crucial finding 3 days before the convention. How did they do it? Russia. Why did Russia hack? Well, there was no evidence at all. There still is no evidence that Russia hacked the DNC.
Can I ask you something, Ray?
Sure.
I mean, I you're not a lawyer and you don't play one on TV and neither do I. But is that criminal? Stealing the election from Bernie Sanders?
Well, it's morally criminal. I guess I don't know enough about politics, but I think this happened.
I'm talking about rule of law here. This is that not interfering with an election? Is that not the crime that they're accusing they're hanging the whole Russiagate thing on? It's like Russia interfering with our election, you know, free and fair elections. Isn't this an interference in a free and fair election?
Well, let me just disclaim any legal expertise, but this happens all the time intramurally. It happened 4 years ago. It happened again this year. Bernie Sanders was screwed out of the nomination. That's the way the Democrats face up to things.
I understand the politics. I'm really trying. You know, whenever I talk about Russiagate, I want to know about the rule of law. I want to know what's criminal and what isn't, because all of a sudden now we're getting to, as I had mentioned before, the rubber to the road. Who is going to be charged for what because of Russiagate? And who should have been charged for what? Because if Russiagate is a cover-up, who should have been charged for what before Russiagate? Okay. Mm-hmm. So now we're hearing that Obama and Biden are off the table for any kind of accountability on the Russiagate front. Okay. That's what Barr said, right?
So, well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. What we have is a situation where Obama's people, and I'm talking about what I call the security state, namely the FBI, the CIA, NSA, and the National Intelligence Director, they were plotting this whole thing, and it's very clear, and the information is available now to the U.S. attorney who's looking into it. It's very clear that they took great liberties with the Constitution and the law to, number one, try to prevent Trump from winning, and number two, once he had won, sabotage his whole administration. And they succeeded in doing that for 2 years, okay? More than 2 years. So, yeah, there's criminal stuff here. And the question about how much Obama knew and when did he know it, well, you know, who's in charge? I mean, Obama was best friends with John Brennan. When John Brennan tried to ditch...
John Brennan, you have to tell our audience who John Brennan... He was head of the CIA at the time.
Yeah, he was longtime head of the CIA under Obama, and before that, the head of his, well, one of his national security advisors for terrorism or anti-terrorism. What happens here is either Brennan told Obama, in my view, what was going on. And Obama didn't say yes or no, but gave a little wink. Or Brennan didn't tell him at all. Now,
Does that put Obama on the hook?
Well, you know, this thing called plausible denial or plausible deniability. If there's no record of Brennan telling the president that, look, this is what we're going to do to sabotage Trump, he'll never win. You know, Hillary's so far ahead, man. It won't, you know, we'll just, this is like insurance, you know. And then after Hillary didn't win, then they meet on the 5th of January 2017 and plot how they're going to proceed, not only with all this other stuff, but with the so-called Steele dossier.
Who's they? Who's they when you say then they meet?
Well, the names are clear. James Comey, head of the FBI, John Brennan, head of the CIA, James Clapper, head of the National Intelligence Setup, and the NSA head then was Admiral Rogers, who played a less role and seems to be cooperating now with John Durham, the U.S. attorney, looking into all this. So here they are on the 5th of January. After Trump had won, and they're planning their little campaign and what they're going to do. Now, how much Obama knew about the details of that is a very interesting question. We're not likely to get a definitive answer about it, but we do have circumstantial evidence. And it's there's a lot of it around, but one key thing is, I think on September 2nd, it was that the lovebirds, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page.
The FBI lovebirds, yes.
Communicating, yeah, the FBI folks. And, you know, that's the mine of information. It's just a wealth of information in these exchange of texts. What she says is, I'm preparing talking points for the boss. Her boss was Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, and she says, and I quote, "Obama wants to know everything that we're doing. Obama wants to know everything that we're doing." Whoa. Well, you know.
that's hard forensic evidence.
Well, yeah, it's a good testimony. Now, there's always the chance that one or two of those people were exaggerating. Maybe Maybe McCabe was telling Lisa Page, look, Obama wants to know without really having that information. But it's out there, okay? So whether or not he was told chapter and verse about all this, he's president of the United States. He's responsible for what's going on the part of his national security chiefs. And the rub is this, that Barr knows about this, okay? Bill Barr, who is the attorney general now, he knows chapter and verse about this. He says that it's an unprecedented attack on an administration. And the president of the United States, Donald Trump, for good or ill, has been naming names. And what names has he named? Comey, Brennan, Clapper? He says they're going to be put in jail. So
Barr actually said, as to President Obama and Vice President Biden, whatever their level of involvement based on the information I have today, I don't expect Mr. Durham's work will lead to a criminal investigation of either man. So he's already telegraphing that Obama and Biden are off the table for criminal charges.
I think the key words there was to the degree I have information today or whatever it was. It makes sense for Barr to appear less threatening to the whole system. He's got these intelligence and security and law enforcement people dead to rights. I mean, he's got copious information on this. So I can see him from a political standpoint saying, "Well, I don't have direct information implicating the president or the vice president right now." And that makes sense, you know.
Because he goes on to say that law enforcement and intelligence officials were involved in a, quote, false and utterly baseless Russian collusion narrative against the president. It was a grave injustice, and it was unprecedented in American history. That's a huge thing.
Yeah.
Like Barr to say.
Yeah. Now, what's important about Bill Barr, the attorney general, is that he's got a really sordid reputation. Back during Iran-Contra, he participated with the first George Bush to exonerate five people who are dead, who are felons, including the defense secretary, whom I used to brief every other morning, Caspar Weinberger. Okay, so he's not got a good record. Now, do people change? Well, yeah, I've changed.
Not easily.
Well, look, here's Barr giving an interview about 6 months ago up in Alaska. He's asked about his legacy, you know, and he says, I don't give a hoot about my legacy. I'm on my last years here. I'm going to do what I am appointed to do. And then, as you just quoted him, that's way, way out in front. Now, if anyone thought that he was doing that on his own, well, you have the president himself naming names. So what am I saying here? I'm saying that, let me answer this question first. My friends say, McGovern, for God's sake, you're telling us that the highest, the most senior intelligence and law enforcement officials of our country were playing havoc with the law and the Constitution before the election and after the election? How can you explain that? I said, you know, it's really easy if you take a step back. What do you mean? Oh, this is the explanation. Hillary was sure to win. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means, if you look at Comey's book, you know, a higher loyalty, so to speak. He says, quote, I was operating in an environment where Hillary Clinton was sure to be our next president, period, end quote. Okay, now, you're operating in that environment. She's sure to win. What's to prevent you from helping her to win? Why do you have to hesitate doing everything you possibly can, even if it's extracurricular or illegal, to help her win? Because, she's going to win. You're not going to be indicted.
The hook.
You're going to be promoted. And the last thing I'll say on that is that in that kind of, quote, environment, you don't take rudimentary steps to hide your tracks, okay? And that's why the U.S. attorney in Connecticut, John Durham, has chapter and verse, both from computers and from hard copy, with respect to exactly what was done. And so the only question to me is whether John Durham will be given his by his boss, Attorney General Bill Barr, and that seems clear he will be, but the more important question is, will Donald Trump chicken out?
What do you mean? Why would he chicken out?
Well, let me cite the most obvious evidence here. When Trump was still president-elect, January 3rd, 2017, Chuck Schumer was invited on to Rachel Maddow. And Rachel says, Chuck, you have something to tell me. What is it? And Schumer says, you know, Rachel, I thought the president-elect was a pretty smart guy. And you know, he's a businessman. He's not going to bite off more than he can chew. But he's done something very, very stupid, foolish. And she, oh, what would that be? And Schumer says, well, he's taken on the intelligence community. And they have six ways from Sunday to get back at you. Very foolish thing, says Schumer. Now, that's a very clear warning to any incoming president. You don't cross the intelligence community. A public warning that Trump should have been able to heed. Maybe he didn't. That was the 3rd of January. On the 5th of January, they completed their little plotting in the White House, with the president, the vice president, and these national security chiefs present. And what was it? Well, it was to give the president-elect the next day, on the 6th of January, this so-called, quote, intelligence community assessment, end quote, which is a misnomer. It wasn't the intelligence community. It was three agencies.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even three agencies. It was handpicked analysts. Anyhow, they're going to give the... So next day, Comey, Brennan, Clapper, and Rogers from NSA, they show up at Trump Tower and they give the president this briefing. And they say, now we're publishing this today. And sorry, Mr. President-elect, but it says that the Russians are responsible for your win. They interfered. And without the Russians' help, you wouldn't have won. And then Comey says, now, gentlemen, would you excuse us? I need to pass something very sensitive along to the president, president-elect. And so they leave. And then he says, Comey says to Trump, now, Mr. President-elect, I don't know, this is really awkward, but we have this dossier. It's not verified completely yet, but it's out there, and the press is going to have it, or has it already. And we just want to let you know, it has you participating in incredibly scurrilous activities, like in Moscow with prostitutes. And it's just, again, we can't verify, but it's there. And just so you know.
So they hit him with... You didn't win fair and square, and we've got this steel dossier on you that shows that you've done all kinds of disgusting things. So that's how they got back at him at that point. And then of course the Russiagate thing. But I also find it interesting, Ray, that the whole Seth Rich angle that is playing out in the courts. With these fights with the FBI for information and fights, defamation, fights about defamation, Aaron accusing everybody and his brother of defamation for talking about possible connections between Seth and Seth's murder and the computers and the information from the DNC computers being given to WikiLeaks. Barr hasn't looked at any of that, it seems. No comments, no nothing. What's going on with that?
Well, John Durham, that's John Durham's action. Durham knows about all this. And, you know, if he needed any extra help, this fellow, the lawyer named Clevenger, has completely supplied him with all this stuff. Let me just get back 1 second for just to finish up this scene. Picture it. Here's says Comey alone with the president-elect. And we have, just so you know, we have this information, which is just devastating. And you know, Trump hadn't been around in Washington, okay? Trump had this idea that he could cajole, win over pretty much anyone to his good favor. And so, you know, what I would have done if Comey pulled that on me, this is J. Edgar Hoover on steroids. I think most of your listeners will understand that. What I would have said
on
is
steroids and in a tutu. Yes.
Yeah. I always said, Mr. Comey, clean it. Go home. Go back to your office. Clean out your desk. I'm going to be president in 2 weeks. You're out of here. You're out of here now, as far as I'm concerned. Don't pull that trick on me. Every president-elect has been treated to this little briefing about, just so you know, Mr. President, we have this stuff. Come on, get out of here, Comey. You're fired. That's what I would have done. That's what anybody who had any experience in Washington
would. Yeah, well, he's a newbie. He was a newbie in politics, but let's face it, I think he's more than been able to defend himself. He has a lot of reptilian experience, and so I think that he's, you know, that moment has come and gone. And Comey, do you think Comey's going to be indicted?
Well, that's the question. Now, 13 months ago, Devin Nunes of the House Intelligence Committee publicly said, we have 8 criminal referrals to the Justice Department that we're ready to give, and things are really coming to a head. And now, the word was that he had to get those past the White House first, you know, make sure that they would support that. And what happened? Have you heard anything about those 8 criminal referrals?
Well, what was in them is what I want to know.
Well, it was all the likely suspects, the people that we've just been naming, and other people like Loretta Lynch, for example, and McCabe. And, you know, the miscreants are clear. It's on the record. So my point is simply this. Trump flinched. Trump threw Nunes under the bus. Why? Well, I think Trump is very mindful of the warning he got, not only from Comey, but from Schumer to Rachel Maddow. Trump is afraid of these guys, and justifiably so. So is Obama. There is reason to fear these guys. You know, you don't have to go back to what happened to JFK. There are more recent instances where the national security state is running things in Washington, and you don't dare cross them, as Chuck Schumer so eloquently said. So, if push comes to shove, let's posit that that this information that was not hidden because Hillary was sure to win, that John Durham has all that information. Bill Barr is saying, you know, this is unprecedented. We really have to make this right. Now, let's say Durham finishes his investigation next week and they go to the White House and they say, all right, we're all set to go. We're going to indict Comey, Brennan, and Clapper at the first tranche. Okay. What is Trump going to do? Now, I'm not a betting man, but I think the odds are Trump is going to back down. He's going to flinch.
Oh, my God. Really?
Well, this has happened before. And if he does, Barr and what's his name? Durham are going to just salute. You know, this happened before with Durham involved actively when there was copious written evidence that the CIA holding guns to people's temples and torturing them in all manner of ways. It was on the public record. He investigated it. And what did Obama do? He said, well, no, I think we better not. And so he dropped it. Okay. Now that was a couple of years ago, but we have a new sheriff in town. I think Barr, whatever my friends tell me about Barr, I think he's really interested in making sure this doesn't happen again to any other president. I think that that Durham is quite up to sorting out this obvious evidence. The question is, what will Trump do? Will he chicken out? Secretary. And he did chicken out. I cited a very precise instance where he chickened out 13 months ago when he threw Devin Nunes under the bus. Will he throw these guys under the bus? Well, I wouldn't put it past him. So well, I don't know
what Trump
is going to do, but what he does is going to be controlling.
Well, here, then what if he threw, after he threw Nunes under the bus, then what was the point of Durham even starting this thing? I mean, yes, I know that Barr tells him to do it, but Barr saw what happened with Nunes. So why would he have Durham do it again, knowing maybe 50%, maybe more than 50% that the president is going to, you know, just kick this to the side? That's question number one. And question number two is, if that is indeed the case, then what? What are we living? Where do we get accountability?
Well, in answer to your first point, it argues for Barr's seriousness here. In other words, sure, Barr knows what happened to Nunes. They got thrown under the bus, and he did it anyway. And he's saying these things anyway. And Trump himself is talking about, is naming names of these guys that, as Trump says, should be put in jail. So, Barr seems to be quite serious about this. And as I said before, since these people were so clear, so confident that Hillary was going to win, they did not take rudimentary steps to disguise or to suppress or to delete all this material. So Durham's got it. He was supposed to have reported out about this time or before this time. Now, maybe the virus has something to do with the delay. But, it's all going to depend on the calculus that the president makes. And it could go either way. He may feel that he really needs to lash out at this point before the election. Or he might decide, well, no, this is too dangerous. These guys, Brennan, Clapper, Comey, these guys, they have a lot of support still in the Department of Justice and these other agencies. They're going to get me if I follow the law. If I give, if I say, yeah, Bill Barr, you and Durham, give it to them, indict them, and see what happens. The indictments, by the way, if they come, there's not going to be any judicial proceedings until after the election. But the indictments themselves would be a major factor in the campaign, I'm sure.
Oh God, I just feel sick to my stomach that it all has to be hung on, some personal interest of the president. I mean, his election. I mean, this thing has been dragging on and dragging on. It feels like the whole Epstein case, same thing, dragging on all this evidence, all these other people who should have been brought in, who should have been arrested and put in jail already, and it still hasn't happened. By the way, I just want to tell you that just now, Ty Clevenger, the lawyer we were talking about, he has put out a petition. And it's called, it's a We the People petition, and it's asking for the FBI to be order the FBI and the National Security Agency to release records about Seth Rich and WikiLeaks. He created it just now, and he said, Democratic National Committee employee Seth Rich was murdered in Washington, D.C. on July 10th, 2016. A few weeks later, Julian Assange implied that Mr. Rich, not Russian agents, were the source of DNC emails published by WikiLeaks. Evidence released over the last 9 months proves that the FBI gave false testimony in order to hide evidence about Mr. Rich and his connection to WikiLeaks. Attorney General William Barr should order the FBI to search for and release its records about Mr. Rich, and Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe should order the National Security Agency to declassify and release its records about Mr. Rich. Director Ratcliffe should further order the NSA and the CIA to declassify and release all data showing who transmitted the DNC emails to WikiLeaks. He just put that out.
Yeah, I have it on my screen. I was about to sign it when we signed on.
And I'm telling you, the thing, again, this is the thing that I find so deeply troubling, okay, is it feels like this massive foot dragging and this kabuki theater thing where, you know, you kind of go into things and but then you know, and then it falls back, and then you kind of go a little deeper, and then this happens, and so nothing, you know, nothing, no accountability here, and then this over, and it just keeps going back, and it seems like a game that it's not about our democracy or serving the people or any of that. It's about these personal political agendas for access to, you know, the power, the seats of power and the resources that go with it. And it's all playing out in front of us, and we're just watching it like we're totally beside the point.
Well, Christina, this is not the first time you've encountered this kind of thing. I recall your TWA masterpiece. There are interests that prevent the truth from coming out, and that's what happened then, and that's what's happening now, so far. Now, why do I say so far? Well, Ratcliffe, who's going to take over the National Intelligence Directorship early next week, is somebody who's not going to obfuscate. He's not going to fool around. If the evidence is there, he's going to not only sort it out, but he's going to make it public, okay? Now, that's really important because the evidence is around and he can make it public in a very legal way. So what I'm saying here is this, that...
Well, wait a second. Why don't you tell me why you think he's going to be so different?
Well, because he's not like any of his predecessors. In other words, Ratcliffe is a partisan, and that's no good for intelligence. I'm the first to admit that. But he's not going to be deterred by foot dragging on the part of the CIA, the FBI, or the NSA, or the Department of the National Intelligence Directorate. Look, just to sort of put the thing whole conversation in perspective here. The new news is old news. It goes back to December 2017, but was just released 2 weeks ago. Now, guess what? You won't find one word in the New York Times, the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal about this bombshell where the head of CrowdStrike admits that he doesn't have any forensic evidence. He doesn't have any good evidence at all that the DNC was hacked, either by Russia or by anybody else. Now, that confirms what we've been saying in Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. From a technical point of view, we have, after all, two former technical directors of NSA in our group. That's what we've been saying for 3.5 years. Now, people say to me these days, Ray, aren't you tired? Don't you get tired doing all this stuff? I say, well, you know, we took a solemn oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. We spent careers in government defending against foreign enemies. We never thought we'd be in the position of having to defend the Constitution against domestic enemies, but here we are, okay? And you ask if we get tired? Well, our oath has no expiration date. We've checked that with the lawyers, okay? And, you know, we didn't swear to support the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, until we got tired, okay? So you could say, in a sense, we're used to this, okay? And we do have some confidence now that the truth will come out. The really sorrowful thing is that no one in the public can appreciate the fact that we used to toil our fields. We used to do our analysis based on the facts, based on the evidence, whichever way it bent, okay? We did speak truth to power without fear or favor. That's our ethos, okay? And that's what we're still doing. Now, people shake their heads and say, no, everyone has a political agenda. We don't. Now, most of us, I would say to all, we come in all kinds of stripes, political stripes, and veteran intelligence professionals for sanity. But most of us, you know, have real problems with Donald Trump. I will say for myself that I think he's the very worst president the United States has ever had. And that's why it's really, really hard for us to appear to be supporting what he said. Now, it's the only thing that he said that I can recall offhand that has been true. And so we say it has been true. And we had to issue a disclaimer in our seminal work that we sent to him on July 24th, 2017.
That is your VIPS report. Is that correct?
That's right.
Was the report that looked at some of the forensic evidence connected to the DNC emails getting to WikiLeaks, and you, in the report, you concluded that it was a local download of the materials. Yeah. Not correct?
Yeah, and we could tell that from the technical evidence that we already had. Now, if you want an update on that, if there are people listening who are really good at cyber, look at consortiumnews.com this morning. The lead article has to do with the forensics. Guccifer 2. Who's Guccifer 2.0? Well, we think we know. His initials are John Brennan. God's sake, you know. Now, we need more evidence to be sure about that. But this whole thing is so contrived, and to real computer experts, they can see what the real score is. CrowdStrike didn't even do the work, never even gave the FBI a complete final report without redactions. And, you know, the whole thing smells to high heaven. So what I'm saying here is we got to keep doing what we've been doing. We're a little long in the tooth now, but we've got experience that certainly counteracts any impediments due to age.
Something.
And we're going to keep doing it. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you something.
Sure.
How important do you think that VIPS report is? How important do you think it is?
Well, the one from 24 July 2017, that was our 50th such report. Our first one was when Captain Powell spoke before the UN. So that's just about two or three a year. It was very important. It said to the president, look, Mr. President, ask around. Find out who this Guccifer 2.0 shadowy figure is, you know? And it caused the president to tell his then CIA director, Mike Pompeo, to interview Bill Binney, one of our two former technical directors of the NSA, okay? Now, what happened? That was the 24th of July. On the 24th of October, Pompeo, then still CIA director, said, well, you know, president asked me to do this, I got to do it. So he has Bill Binney up to the seventh floor, the conference room where I spent endless hours during my career. Okay, so the first thing he says to Bill Binney is, Mr. Binney, I just want you to know that the only reason you're here is because the president asked me to invite you here. He said that if I want to know about Russiagate, if I want to know about Russian hacking, I need to talk to you. So, well, what do you say? No, I wasn't there, but Bill told me right away. He says, I told him, look, Mr. Pompeo, I'm sorry to tell you this, but your people are lying to you. There was no Russian hack, and I can prove it. And Pompeo had two assistants there. They didn't seem to be very well trained in cyber. They were just taking notes.
Did he do anything with that information?
Well, he didn't.
Well, here's why I'm asking you this question, okay? Because when Patrick Lawrence covered the publication of your report in The Nation, he ran into a major buzzsaw, okay?
Right.
All kinds of people calling Katrina Vandehuvel the publisher of The Nation, which forced her to come up with this forum in which you basically had a limited exchange between, it was you, it was Benny and your whole group, Vip's group, that came up with, you know, a lot, with a lot of technical expertise against the, this group of dissenters. Okay. Six dissenters, people like Thomas Drake, Jesslyn Radek, Scott Ritter, these people who I frankly don't think were carrying, they just don't have, for example, Bill Binney's background, but, you know, experience. That being said, the final word as an arbiter was given to Nathan Freitas of the Guardian Project, right? The Guardian Project is, it's a company that creates, they say it creates secure apps that can be used around the world by any person looking to protect their communications and personal data from unjust intrusion, interception, and monitoring. He decided, he sort of decided, you know, he had the final word on this issue. Anyway, I felt that this was not a complete debate because, you know, they sort of cast a lot of doubt but didn't give that much information. And they went to Freitas as the ultimate arbiter. So I asked Freitas if he would debate Benny, Bill Benny, on our radio show. And I got what I thought was a very interesting response for him. Okay. He said that he didn't have the time and interest to discuss the topic, that he wrote and published all his thoughts, which were just a very minor piece of the whole story. My opinion was the conclusions being drawn are not sufficiently backed by the available data, and that based on my experience in similar cases, a remote intruder was the simplest and most likely answer. And then he says, there is no way I could talk for 2 hours about this topic, let alone 10 minutes, given the time that has passed and the more pressing issues of the world today. I'd like your reaction to that. I only have a minute here, so.
Well,
tell me what you think of that.
This is very sad. You know, this all has to do with politics, not intelligence. Patrick Lawrence had done a wonderful article, and there was an insurrection on the part of the staff of the Nation, who are all rabid Hillary supporters and infected by the Hillary would have won virus, okay? And the editor felt compelled to throw Patrick Lawrence under the bus and eventually fire him, and then set up this bogus exchange between people who didn't know the first thing about the subject, the so-called dissenters, who are very quiet now, and the real experts, two former directors of the technical directors of the NSA, plus myself and a couple other folks. So it was a very lamentable exercise in journalism. It was pure political politics. And now that there's more than technical evidence, now that CrowdStrike's head has said we never had any evidence of a Russian hack, I'm just really curious as to what the editor of The Nation will do at this point.
I find Nathan Freitas's response very interesting, frankly. I mean, honestly, there are more pressing issues. There are lots of pressing issues. But if you don't think this one, which is, I mean, and your whole existence, your whole Guardian project is about protecting information and so on and so forth. And, you know, I'm just shocked at this. I really am.
Why do you think The Nation picked him?
Well, I mean, that may be, but my God, if you're supposed to be some kind of really, you know, an expert, don't you have enough self-respect and pride to stay in the truth scene?
Not if you're up against the likes of Bill Binney, who created these systems. You know, who is still the most admired person that ever worked for NSA. If you're up against Bill Binney, you're going to make up stuff that you can't defend, and then you not want to talk about it anymore.